Well, in respect of everyone's time, we'll get started. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining our call today. Again, this is Krista Sheets, President of Paragon Resources. As many of you know, we consult investment advisory teams on how to capitalize on the individual talents of its members. I have also asked our strategic partner and my friend, Sarah Dale, President and founder of No No Bounds, to join us. Sarah has 16 years of industry experience with a unique background in service, sales, and leadership. Her successful career has evolved from working directly with clients to developing firm products and programs. She implements strategies for building and leading teams, develops and delivers training and coaching initiatives, and helps create systems for revenue growth. Thanks for being on the call today, Sarah. Late last year, Sarah and I joined forces. We found that we both have a passion for building teams who deliver excellent service. And together, we are designing programs on how to be more effective in broadening and deepening your client relationships. This was the reason for the service survey that you each recently participated in. We wanted to build programs that fit your needs in today's markets. If you haven't yet downloaded that full report, please do so by going to www.paragonresources.com/library/service-report.pdf. Again, that's www.paragonresources.com/library/service-report.pdf. We appreciate you providing your input on the survey, and for the next few minutes, I will review some highlights from it. Later in the call, Sarah will quickly walk you through a five-step process that will help you develop a service initiative for your business. Finally, we will end the call with your questions on service, including any challenges that you would like to address and any comments you may have about the survey. We expect the call to take about 30 minutes, and then we will be recording today's call because many of you, of the over 400 respondents, couldn't attend today. We'll be sure to send you information on how you, too, can listen to the recording if you'd like. Okay, let's get started. When it comes to your general service offerings, overall, you rated yourselves pretty high with 87% scoring it as working well or extremely well. 87% of you also feel you are doing a pretty good job of responding to client requests and service problems, but more than half, about 54% of you would like help on how to proactively communicate with clients, how to conduct client appreciation events, and how to get to know your clients' family members. Sarah and I see these as areas that we can help you, and we'll make sure we do so in 2007. In addition to the survey we conducted, we sought additional research. One public opinion poll that we found from the Gallup organization doesn't fare so well for your industry. Gallup polls the general public on their opinion of the various professions. Consistently, since 1981, our industry has been in the bottom rankings. Less than 20% of respondents rate your comrades' honesty and ethical standards as very high or high. Let me repeat that. Less than 20% think the industry is honest. This means that over 80% of the general public rates the industry as average, low, or very low on ethics. I know the people participating on this call are among the elite in the industry, and I'm sure your clients are among those few 20% that trust you and value your profession. With this data, we see an opportunity for you to distinguish yourselves and to stand out from your not-so-professional competitors. How you do that is by proactively communicating a service commitment to your clients in writing and letting them know that you take your profession seriously. Getting back to our survey, three-fourths of the participants do not currently use a written service agreement with their clients. At the same time, when asked how frequently you should proactively communicate with your best clients, there was a common vague response that we received, as frequently as they desire. What? As frequently as they desire? How the heck do you find the answer if you don't discuss and set expectations in the beginning of the client relationship? A written service commitment helps facilitate the discussion and allows you and the client to get on the same page and avoid any missed expectations. With 35% of you knowing that you have lost a client due to service issues and another 25% unsure if you have, that means 60% of you can minimize lost assets and revenues if you clearly articulate your service model to your clients. The service model includes defining how you will communicate with them, and how frequently. It includes what they can expect for portfolio reviews, how often they will receive research, and what you offer as education, who to contact if they have a question, and so on. Another factor that can minimize your lost assets and revenues is to have an idea on who your ideal client is. But according to the survey, only 20% of you have clearly defined and documented this for your business. With these two critical items for your business, you'll have a higher probability of getting along with your clients because you'll be focused on bringing in the right clients for your practice and what you have to offer. I think many of you would agree that your clients expect some ups and downs on performance that comes with the territory. They know you have to be competent or you wouldn't have the licenses and professional designation letters after your name. When a client is dissatisfied with you enough to consider leaving you, it often is due to a breakdown of your service to them. They may feel unappreciated or ignored. They expect you to be there when they need you, and for some reason, their expectations are not being met. Something may be wrong with the client experience you are delivering if they are firing you. In addition to some clients firing you, we see that over 93% of you are trying to eliminate your not-so-ideal clients. 93% of you are trying to minimize your books. That is an astonishing number. What did you all do to bring on clients that are not worthy of you today? Or what haven't you done to develop those relationships so that they could be one of your best? Often advisors overlook organic growth and instead prefer bringing in new assets. Before you are so interested in getting rid of some of those clients and bringing and replacing them with new ones, I ask you to think, have you done everything to maximize those client relationships? Are you really sure that they do not have assets elsewhere and were just too unimpressed to give them to you? Trust me, in my consulting, and I know Sarah's, we'll be the first ones to advise our FA clients on migrating clients out of their books that are not profitable or just don't fit the business model today or you just plainly don't like anymore. According to the survey, though, there's 78% of you that have fired clients in the past for these reasons. But I always ask advisors to reprofile their clients first before making a decision. With the clients that I work with, those FAs that have built a respectable, successful business, they may be going through some growing pains, unable to take the business to the next level. They may find the need to upgrade and clean up their client base to get healthy and profitable. They are frustrated with the amount of hours they're working, etc. Often one of the first things they need to do is go to their B and C clients and tell them they now have a minimum account size to do business. Many people don't like change, so they suddenly hit the jackpot or look at their statements and find that enough money to stay with you. There often is hidden gold in your own book, so don't be so quick to cut. Take care of the low-hanging fruit, nurture them, and I'm sure you'll reap a fruitful bounty. And for this reason, I think another area that they find they don't want to talk to these BNC clients is because they're afraid to get some negative feedback because they realize they've ignored them too long and don't want to deal with hearing how bad they are. That's why I think there seems to be a lot of conversation on conducting client surveys in the industry. We find they are a good way to get feedback from your clients and improve your relationships. And we recommend them, but only 36% of you are currently doing them today. And about 37% of you don't conduct client exit interviews when a client leaves. Again, that makes me wonder, how are you finding out what you can do better to improve your service if you don't ask anyone that does business with you? An outside consultant can come in and make recommendations on how to improve your day-to-day operations, but it is the client's voice that needs to be heard to make sure their value that they value your relationship with you. In summary, with our research, our experiences coaching and consulting investment professionals, and the feedback you provided in the survey, it has all led us to believe that there may be a disconnect of what you all say you want to do when servicing your clients and what you actually do. Something is causing many in the industry to fail on execution. There are many reasons for these failures, some that are outside of your control, but many that you have complete control over. Our goal is for you to do the best job possible of wowing your clients so that people are banging the doors down to do business with you. We want your clients to be advocates for you, telling their friends and family that they must do business with you because you are different than those other not-so-professional stockbrokers out there. Again, that's what they call you, not me. So as I mentioned earlier, there is a need for a service commitment with your clients. We've put together a simple 5-step process to help advisory teams truly differentiate themselves and deliver extraordinary service on an ongoing basis. The survey you participated in really helped us take the pulse of the industry and ensure that we included and addressed the concerns and issues you, the field, are experiencing. We have written our process based on your responses, along with others with whom we have worked to ensure it will make a tremendous impact on your business. Before Sarah gets into the process, I think it's important to go over a couple of items. First, what is the relationship between service and sales? So many financial advisors hear the word service and think, that's not my job. That's my sales assistant's or my staff's job, and totally tune out. Dang, this is the wrong thinking. We believe that service and sales are not two separate entities. In fact, they are interdependent on one another, and one cannot thrive for the long term without the other. It is, in fact, the service that you provide that will drive your sales. Once you begin executing a well-orchestrated service model, the benefits are not just warm and fuzzy clients. You will deepen your existing relationships, both personally and professionally. You will experience an increase in assets under management, revenues, profitability. You will retain more clients, and by defining and planning all service you deliver to your clients, you will improve the efficiency of your practice. The process we developed will result in spectacular service encounters that lead to the ideal client experience. This is about doing more business and making a difference in the lives of your clients. I'm sure everyone is interested in these benefits, taking service from the ordinary to the extraordinary, and ensuring that it is sustained for the long term isn't easy. You can't just make a few extra calls a day to your top clients or mail a holiday or birthday card once in a while. Showing your clients you appreciate their business and respect the trust they have placed in you to manage their assets requires a system for consistent and comprehensive execution. I'm sure you all use a process when working with your clients to make certain you address all their financial needs. We, too, use a process to facilitate the implementation of delivering excellent service. And now Sarah will quickly walk you through the process. Sarah?
Thank you, Krista, very much. And thanks to everyone for joining us today, both on this call and for completing the survey earlier in the year. It's much appreciated. Let's jump right into the process. There are 5 A's that are involved. Analyze, allocate, assemble, activate, and assess. And I'm going to walk you through each of these from sort of a big picture standpoint. The first is analyze. So the first thing that we think that you should be doing is really analyzing your book and analyzing your clients, because you need to do that in order to classify your book of business. And it's truly the organization of your book that's going to be at the heart of your service model. At Paragon Resources and at No No Bounds, we're big believers that every client in your book of business deserves some level of service, or they shouldn't be a client of your practice. Let me say that again. Every client in your book of business deserves some level of service, or they shouldn't be a client at all. So obviously your resources should be spent on your best clients, but nobody should be ignored. So you have to understand your book and your clients first. You need to know where the majority of your business is coming from and who your best clients are. You need to recognize which relationships are profitable, which relationships proactively provide you with referrals? Which relationships do you really enjoy? So performing some analysis is going to help you gain a better understanding of your current situation. It's going to help develop the all-important definition of your ideal client relationship. And then subsequently, it'll help you define criteria to segment your practice, ultimately delineating specific levels of clientele such as A, B, and C. So your analysis and this subsequent categorization is going to be the foundation for managing your client database, delivering the appropriate service to your clients and enhancing those relationships, and then finding those organic growth opportunities that Krista alluded to earlier. Once accomplished, once you've got your book segmented, all your marketing and your service endeavors can be performed based on this well-organized book, which is going to substantially increase the team's overall efficiency. Now, we know that every financial advisory practice is different, so how you analyze and segment is going to vary. And this first step in the process allows you to devise the segmentation criteria that's really right for your business model and your style. The end result of analyze is that you have a segmented book of business, for instance, just into A, B, and C clients, so that you can then define what services each of those groups is going to receive. Which leads us right into our second A, which is allocate. And this is where you're going to devise that service menu and specifically distinguish the type of services the practice should provide to each of your newly segmented clients. Now, some menu items are going to depend on the type of firm with whom you work, and others can be individualized based on your team's preferences, feasibility, and of course your style of business. You're going to need to identify the core service ingredients for all segments, the things that every client on your book will receive, and then you need to identify those additional, those superior service ingredients that you'll provide to your best clients or the true advocates within your practice. Most importantly, as you're working through your menu, you need to include your communication and your appreciation items. What communication and appreciation are you going to give to your A, your B, and your C clients? Now, I know you guys have heard this before, but communication is absolutely the number one client complaint in our industry. Yet communication is the very foundation for your client relationships and your service. And if you really think about that, communication is the foundation for most of our relationships. Think about your spouse, think about your kids. The most of the problems in your relationship stem from misunderstandings or lack of communication and understanding. So the service menu that you design is going to include this communication plan, a series of touches to ensure that your clients never complain about either the frequency or the value of your practice's communication. Again, your A clients are obviously going to receive a greater number of touches or connection opportunities than your C clients will. Ultimately, this menu is going to help you properly set client expectations and will lead to that service commitment agreement that Krista talked about earlier. Each segment of your client base is going to know exactly what to expect, and your team will know precisely what needs to be delivered at what intervals. Let's move on to the third A. Our third A in the process is assemble. And in this step, you need to identify and assemble the resources required to activate your service menu. You may be feeling a little overwhelmed at this point. Gosh, Sharon, Krista, I've got to come up with all these different services for my A, B, and C clients. How in the world am I going to be able to deliver that? So it's very important to think about your resources. And ultimately, you want to think about all the resource providers that you have available to you. And this is going to include people, and it's going to include technology. So you should be defining the who and the what to aid in delivery of your service initiative. And additionally, you're going to need to decide whether you have internal resources or if you need to seek external resources. And of course, Krista and I always recommend that you want to maximize your internal resources before looking externally. And think about it. You know, there's a lot of different people and facets that can affect the service side of your practice. It's not just about your actual team. And a lot of these resources are typically underutilized. And if you can figure out how to more effectively use them, you're going to be able to implement your new service model much more effectively. So from the branch receptionist to home office product specialist to your preferred wholesalers of mutual fund or annuity products, these are all resources that you need to identify and then subsequently optimize. So whether you're a team of two or a team of 10, this step helps ensure that you maximize the internal and the external people and technological resources available to help you deliver the service menu that you just designed. You're going to be building accountability into your process and assigning responsibilities so that you can really leverage both the time and talent of your team. And at the end of this third A, assemble, you're going to have a master list and a plan of how to maximize all your service resources going forward. So let's take a step back quickly. You've got a newly segmented book of business, you've got an ideal service menu, and you've got the right people and the right technological resources required. It's time for you to really activate this plan. So our fourth A is activate. You need systems, you need processes, so that the service initiative is delivered consistently for the long run. So our activate phase is purely about implementing, executing, and doing. I think, you know, one of the most common challenges in execution is developing processes that result in your service initiative running like a well-oiled machine, yet give an air of customization. In order to minimize the time and maximize your results, you're going to have to find a balance between the efficient factory line and crafting services for each client. So if you remember the first day was analysis, this is where that information is going to add value, because team knowledge of each client is going to be vital to executing the right service to them. And this is also where today's technology can play a role. Your practice needs to have standards for each activity to increase the pace of execution, but allow for that customization. And this is probably where Krista and I can help provide the most value in the process. When we coach and consult on this step and in and around this topic, we cover information on developing strong relationships with your clients, with your partners, with all your service providers and vendors. We help give you tools that are going to help improve your efficiencies, show you how and where to personalize what you do, and we'll include specific campaigns, letters, scripts, and checklists that you can utilize. You know, there's an enormous amount of advisors out there who state that service is what differentiates them, but they don't have anything to back it up. It's just words. It's not action. So it's the activate stage that will differentiate you. The execution of your service menu will show your clients your commitment to service. The processes and tools that you use may initially seem like it's a lot of work, but they're soon going to become positive habits and activities that become a normal part of your practice management. Like any kind of change in your business or your life, you know, change is difficult, but once you get it down pat, it becomes habitual, positive activities, and you don't even think about it twice. So Activate is really your opportunity to connect with your clients, establish those commitments, show them your service, and really differentiate your advisory practice. So at the end of Activate, what do you have? You have a wealth of materials and tools to execute your customized plan and really drive the service side of your practice, which, as Krista mentioned earlier, is going to subsequently drive your sales. Let me move on to our fifth and final A, and that's assess. Now, we know that you guys do performance reviews with your clients. You rebalance their portfolios. And likewise, you're going to need to assess your service menu to make sure that you're achieving those results that you set out to achieve. So step five involves ideas on how to evaluate your service from everyone's perspective, from your perspective, from your team's perspective, from your external partner's perspective, for those of you that do a lot of work with CPAs and attorneys, and of course, most importantly, from your client's perspective. You should use strategies such as surveying your clients on a regular basis and conducting those exit interviews. Again, Krista touched on this earlier. You're going to need to evaluate your service ingredients. You know, maybe in the last year your firm has added new financial planning software that you want to now provide to your B clients that you didn't before. So you need to think about your service ingredients on that menu. You need to evaluate the systems that you're using to deliver that service. You need to grade yourself on how well you know your best clients and determine if any of them can be considered for moving up that ladder. Could some of those B clients now become A clients? So by the end of the assess phase, you're going to have all the information necessary to identify what's working and what isn't. This is going to be your time to fine-tune, make any necessary tweaks or changes to your service model. And you really need this regular review in order to make adjustments to make sure that this service model of yours enjoys ongoing success with your clientele. Now, I know I've talked quickly and gone over this very fast, but hopefully this quick overview has given you an idea of the process involved to make sure that you deliver phenomenal service to your clients. Let me summarize it very quickly. First, you want to understand your clients and your book of business. That's analyze. Second, you want to develop that ideal service menu for each segment. That's allocate. Third, you want to identify and maximize your resources. That's assemble. Fourth, you want to activate the service plan. And finally, fifth, you want to assess and evaluate your plan. Now, we do want you to know that this process, it's not about wowing new clients, and it's not about providing 90 days of exceptional service. This is about a lifetime of service that leads to increased business and client retention. This is about transforming the ordinary to extraordinary from both a business perspective and a relationship perspective. Client names are going to become client relationships. Casual interactions with other professionals and product providers are going to become true partnerships. Your business dramatically increases, and your team's name and reputation becomes infamous in your community. In order to achieve long-term, unvarying delivery, you must have a service model with standards, processes, and systems in place, along, of course, with that all-important commitment to providing your clients that unbeatable service. So there's clearly an investment of time to establish a service model, but it will pay off in trumps. We all know that portfolio performance has its place of importance, clearly. But service is where you're going to make or break your client relationships. It is the small things that you do that are going to make a big difference to your client's loyalty and their commitment to you. So creating, communicating, and delivering a well-orchestrated service model with distinct levels of service will translate into positive, rewarding client experiences. And it is your service that's going to drive your sales. So thank you for letting me review that with you. And with that, let me turn it back over to Krista and open it up for questions.
Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate you going through that five-step process. It's been many hours and many months of work for us that we've been working on, and we hope to release in 2007 a how-to book on developing a great service model to the industry and designing teams and firm-wide training resources and programs for this service process. And we at Paragon and at Know No Bounds are big believers in providing actionable ideas, so our resources won't be pages of theory and concepts. So instead, they will include simple explanation, instructions, samples, actual tools for you to implement into your practice. And I'm sure many of you have attended conferences and come back with great ideas. You have had every intention of implementing, but you get busy and it's easy to slip back into old habits and routines. We therefore know how important it is to give you the actual tools in order to execute the ideas. So stay tuned in our newsletter for more information on the launch of the new service tools in 2007. And at this point, we'd just like to open up the lines for any kind of questions that you may have on the service survey, any issues that you're dealing with when trying to deliver excellent service. And Sarah and I will try to respond.
I'll throw one out there. Hi, Krista. It's Emerson Knowles.
Hi, Emerson. How are you today?
Very well. I have no clue whether we have 9 people here or 8,000, but...
No, we have only about a dozen to 15 today.
Small group today.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, one of the things you do a very good job on, and I do appreciate your work and your assessment skills for us as the professionals, within your construct of building your resources for teams, do you have any particular resources that would be valuable at assisting us as starting as sales, single sales service providers as we evolve to team leaders to help us, in effect, become better or more managed in understanding how to manage the staff? I don't know the other 12 or 15 people if they want to comment, but I started with 20 years as a Lone Ranger, and now I have a whole team.
Uh-huh.
And no one ever taught us how to do that.
Right. Teams are such the buzzword in the last few years, and everyone's thinking you can just add water and it shall grow, and that everyone will get along and everybody will understand that what work needs to get done and just do it. Well, that isn't usually the case. It's usually the case where you've got a lot of challenges along the way of trying to get the work done, and the partners, the
principals of the organization are the ones having to pick up the extra weight and get all the work done and work those extra hours. And where there's clear delineation of lines of responsibility, where people actually own their jobs and really understand what they should be doing, is the best way to really define how to get all the work done. When it comes to service, though, service everyone is involved in. Everyone can touch a client. Everyone can make an impact on a client and a prospect and be able to leave a positive impression on them. And
well, have you developed any frameworks to assist us for how to understand how to assemble that within 3, 4, or 5 people as opposed to just the old model of us and an assistant?
That is what we spend most of our time doing, and that is what the book that Sarah and I are currently writing will outline. It really is a how-to manual, giving you insight on how to capitalize on your resources within your firm, because it may be challenging to do it with 3, 4, 5 people on a team. You really have to look at your firm resources to help deliver the service objectives. You're going to have to look at outside resources, like vendors that may be able to support you in some of your communication strategies. And that is some of the work that we're going to address in the book. Sarah, did you have anything you wanted to add to that comment?
No, I think you did a great job articulating that, and we feel your pain, and we hear it across the industry. Teams, as Krista said, are getting bigger, and it adds a whole new dimension to making sure that more people actually lead to efficiency and ultimately more production. And I think, that's one of the driving factors of why we wanted to write this book and develop these programs on this very subject. So if you stay tuned to Krista's newsletter, you'll start to hear more about it at the beginning of the year when we launch some of these materials, and we'd love to be able to help you.
And I'll just add one more comment that might be a little provocative, and you may not like what I have to say, but I personally don't think the industry can survive with the one-man bands anymore, and even if it's a one-man band with a fifth of a sales assistant, a fourth of a sales assistant, a half of a sales assistant, the industry, to get out of the bad reputation that it has for being unethical and cutthroat and money hungry, needs to be taken seriously, and the only way that can be done is through teams. And the teams, even of 3 or 4 people, may not be big enough if you're trying to deliver a business model of a wealth management services where you're trying to cover so many areas of a client's financial needs. You're going to have to build some bigger teams, and you may have to invest in your business on your own rather than looking for your firm to do it for you. You may have to take some of your paycheck and do some investment in it in order to really deliver the great level of service and solutions and products that the clients deserve. I think that's where the industry's going. I think there's been a compensation or a need for a compensation overhaul, and really considering that the service people actually do add considerable value in a fee-based business, and looking at the profitability and the longevity of the client relationship. So, kind of a...
I don't think that's provocative. I think that's the simple reality.
Good.
Krista, you and I have talked about this before in other calls, that the financial Darwinism will get ugly if you don't evolve to that platform.
Good way to put it. Good way to
no
put
question.
It.
No, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with tomorrow, but HR, and I can't speak for else on this call from another national wirehouse, but HR is scared to death to give us too much advice, because every time we get advice, somebody sues somebody in Arkansas, and then we in Ohio or in Florida are allowed to do something.
Right. It's a shame that the world has gotten that way. If we could just take care of one another, it would probably be a lot easier place to live in. And unfortunately, there are the people out there that are very litigious, so you have to be cautious. But I don't really blame the HR departments. I deal with a lot of them, and it is a challenge. But there's sometimes enough kind of thing, and we've got to deal with it head on. It is a business decision a lot of times. So, does anyone else have any comments on Emerson's question about putting together the teams and utilizing the resources to make this all happen and deliver excellent service? Okay. Does anyone
else? Come on, there can't be some other old dump and hover guys out there.
Dump and hover guys.
They can on your assistant's desk and then stand over a desk until it got done?
No,
I'm sure none of it's
I haven't heard that one before.
Krista, you said you recorded this phone call?
We sure did. We're going to be sending out information by email at the by the end of the week. It'll be sent out to you. You can listen in online at our website.
And when do you anticipate your book being ready?
We are looking at a January 2007 release date. If all goes well, we actually are being sensitive to the content of the book and plan on putting it through the review of at least one compliance officer so that at least it looks good and is well received by advisors of knowing what they can and cannot do. So that may hold us up a little bit. But we hope to release this in January 2007, if not very soon thereafter. Right, Sarah?
Absolutely.
Sarah, did you have any final comments to add?
No, I just like to thank everybody again for your participation and helping us out with that survey, because that really helped us with some direction.
Yes, thank
and,
you.
And we look forward to working with you in the future.
Okay. All right, well, thanks, everybody. We don't keep you from your busy work schedules.
Oh, always good to talk to you, Krista, and
yes,
your fine team.
Yes, thank you very, very much.
Yes, thank you very much. It was very interesting.
We'll keep the good stuff coming.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.